On a morning walk in the holiday town of Noosa, a couple of tourists see a sight they have not expected. A young woman's body, fully clothed, lay as if she were asleep. Her wounds would tell a different tale. Police would rely on a never-before-used area of forensic science.
It doesn't just fly in. It has to be transported by something.
To convict the most cunning of killers.
The questions had to be asked. Did she go there of her own free will? Was she in fact dead at that stage?
We have a pretty high burden of proof to be able to charge anyone with murder.
There's something not right. There's something amiss with this whole picture.
We put it there because it facilitates the grander scheme of committing the perfect murder.
Every single one of us knew that it was him.
The first 48 hours of a murder case are critical to its outcome. And in this case, it was no different. Police had their suspect. Then, as the hours, weeks and months went by, it appeared the killer had created the perfect murder.
I got a phone call that a young female was found deceased in the vegetation off a parking area down at the Noosa Parkland. And the body was found some distance from the parking base. The area was very heavily vegetated. There was acacia, wattle trees in the vicinity and other vegetation. She was obviously in a state where there had been violence done to her body. By that I mean there was marks around the throat and around the cheeks and eyes area.
The body was discovered by a group of holidaymakers at about 8:30 this morning, lying in bushes only a few hundred metres from the beachfront. Police say it's unlikely the body had been there longer than the early hours of this morning. It appeared she'd been bashed and strangled.
Here we have one of the top holiday destinations in Australia, if not possibly the world. And we have a crime of such violence, of such propensity to cause harm to another human being, in what should be an idyllic environment, an idyllic lifestyle that goes with it. As far as what may have caused her to be at this location, you go through all the scenarios that are conceivable. Has she been down there? Was she attacked at the beach or the riverfront? Was she assaulted in the city area? Was her body dumped there?
Noosa being a big tourist destination, you wonder whether she's met foul play after meeting someone at a nightclub, whether she's gone out for a night on the town and met someone and something tragic's happened, and it's occurred pretty much close to where her body was found.
There was all sorts of perambulations that go through your mind as to how this has happened, and obviously you can't discount anything.
At that stage, it was a matter of gathering all of the scientific evidence that's present at the scene and cording the scene off so that this can be conducted by the scientific staff.
We bag the hands up and lock them down so that anything that falls off the fingers or off the nails is found in the bags at the morgue. There are a number of what we call tape lifts collected that's from the clothing on the body to see whether or not there was any fibres or hairs there that may have been associated with an offender.
Your examination is minute. Tyres, footprints, anything at all. Remembering it's a sandy location, and it's very difficult at times to get these sorts of impressions, but those things become very important in the examination of a crime scene.
A number of shoe impressions were found along the public track to where the body was found. But the prints were not the only possible link back to the killer. Soil and vegetation were also gathered in the hope that if they found their offender, it would place him or her at the scene.
Initially, the main focus is to identify the person or the body. There was no identification on her. There were a number of tattoos and a significant amount of earrings in her ears.
The tattooed name she had, Michael and Corey, obviously was a very, very important clue to the puzzle, as it were, as to who she was.
The descriptions of the deceased were given to the media and it was broadcast so members of the public might be able to recognise who the deceased was and try and identify her.
The investigation hit an early hurdle when police discovered the victim was carrying no identification. The woman is in her mid to late 20s with shoulder-length brown hair.
She's dressed in a red-coloured pair of jeans, a dark-coloured top, and she's got a number of tattoos.
The woman also had numerous earrings in both ears and a distinctive S-shaped silver ring. Anyone with information is asked to contact Crime Stoppers or Noosa Police.
As a result of that, people came forward from the Gympie area who would recognise those tattoos and piercings of a lady that they'd known.
Gympie was an hour's drive north of Noosa.
I was surprised it was Gympie area. I thought it would be more a local girl. I still thought that perhaps the nightclub scenario was possibly what had occurred, that she'd been to a nightclub and possibly met with foul play after that. So travelling up to Gympie, it was put another angle on the investigation, was what's going to happen now? Who is this girl? And what are these people going to tell us?
When a call went out to the public to help in identifying the tattooed body of a woman found in Noosa, the police received an immediate response.
There were people in Gympie that thought that they knew the identity of the deceased female. They described the tattoos as they'd known them, and they were quite sure that the person that we found, or the body we found, was Samantha Bodsworth. Obviously, the formal identification hadn't been made.
They asked us to go with them to Brisbane to identify or see if it was our daughter. But I think from our description of her and the body that they had retrieved, I think that it was almost a formality. They virtually knew that our daughter was the one in the morgue. I did in my head, but not in my heart. And as soon as I saw it was Sam, I just had to hug her, even though she wasn't there. Stupidly trying to warm her up, even when you know a person's dead. And she got no makeup on. Not a scrap of makeup. She had a car accident several years before, and she was very self-conscious of her scar on her cheek. And that was so odd. There is no way on this planet she would have gone anywhere, even to the front door, without her makeup on.
So why had Samantha been found 1 hour's drive away in Noosa without her makeup? Police had believed that she may have gone there for a night out and that something had gone wrong with someone she met.
And she'd been murdered by a strange one-night stand, or whatever you call them today. I don't know, but that wouldn't have been Samantha. She would not have done that. It wasn't her scene. She liked to be with the people she knew and she loved.
And that was her two children, Corey and Michael, who were with their paternal grandparents on the night Samantha went out and never came home. The house the three shared was now under forensic examination.
Upon entry to the house through an open garage door, there were a couple of spots of blood. Upon further examination throughout the house, there were some blood stains in the bedroom. There were some wiped up blood stains in the lounge room, dining room area. People often try and clean up crime scenes after they've occurred, and this had all of the characteristics of a fairly rudimentary cleanup.
Samples of blood and bloodied items were collected in hope that the killer might have been injured and left his DNA behind. Samantha's bedroom gave the impression that some sort of struggle had taken place.
We found a hairdryer that had little samples of blood on the cord. So obviously that suggested that perhaps it could have been used in the assault with Samantha, whether it be wrapped around her throat or whether it was used in some other way in the course of her being assaulted.
During the examination of the laundry area, there was a number of items of clothing in the washing machine. We pulled those out and the items of clothing were bloodstained, and amongst the bloodstained clothing was a pendant.
That was one of Sam's much-loved items because her uncle in Britain gave it to her. And you can't get that stone anywhere else but in that particular little part of Britain.
One of the most intriguing aspects of the pendant was that we'd had information from Sam's parent that she'd never removed it. Even when she was having a shower, going swimming, anything, that pendant stayed with her. It was obviously very important to her. And yet here it was, basically in a washing machine in a house where there'd been bloodstains and other signs of violence. So this sort of indicates to you that there's something not right. There's something amiss with this whole picture. Why was it that she didn't have a pendant? Who would have taken it off her? Where was the chain? These questions were the things that informed part of how we needed to really progress the inquiry.
While there seemed no forced entry into Samantha's house, a screen near the front door was off the window. And her car was not in the garage, where her parents had told police it was usually parked. Nor was it at the car park in Noosa, where her body was found.
We had the crime scene at Noosa, which was still very important to us as a crime scene. We had the potential of a crime scene at her house. And obviously, the distance of some hour of travel from the house to Noosa was significant. The questions had to be asked. Did she go there when she was alive? Did she go there of her own free will? Was she in fact dead at that stage? And these scenarios were part of the whole gambit of what we had to look at and try and establish.
At the post-mortem, the pathologist was able to prove that the cause of death was strangulation, and this was consistent with what we saw at the scene, the number of marks that were there.
Scrapings were taken from underneath her fingernails. If Samantha had put up a struggle, then potentially the offender's DNA had been captured.
There was evidence that her clothes that she was in when she was found at Noosa weren't necessarily the clothes that she subsequently died in.
Samantha's injuries would suggest that blood spatter would have been found upon her clothes. There was none.
In other words, someone had changed her clothes, which showed a fairly callous and motivated desire not to be apprehended by police on someone's part.
We were of the impression that Samantha Bodsworth was killed in her home. It was a mystery how she went from Gympie to Hall Road at Noosa, but we were of no doubt that she was murdered in her home.
At the time the search for Samantha's house was being conducted, her ex-partner was helping police with their inquiries. Like her friends, Michael Bodsworth immediately contacted police on hearing a news report of a tattooed woman's body being found in Noosa.
I'll come down to see it's my ex.
Okay. All right.
As soon as I heard Michael and Corey, that's all I needed to hear.
All right. And you have two sons, do you?
Yes, I have two sons, and their names are Michael and Corey.
Michael Bodsworth was interviewed at the Gympie Police Station. He was there of his own free will, and he may have been able to help us with the inquiries. Now, whether help us meant he would be able to provide us with information or whether help us meant he became a person of interest was yet to be proven. At that stage, we had a very open book.
And how long have you known Samantha?
We've been together for 11 years.
Are you still together with Sam?
No.
What's the situation with the two of you?
I got onto the drink and kept on arguing and fighting all the time. So she asked me to leave. I moved to the pub.
Do you remember when that was?
It's about 3-4 months ago.
And when was the last time you saw Samantha?
Just after 5 on Friday.
Yesterday?
Yesterday.
Okay, and whereabouts did you see her at 5 p.m?
Mount Pleasant Hotel. I was standing in the doorway talking, saying that she'd dropped the boys off at Mum and Dad's. And I asked if I could have a shower at her place. She said, yeah, no problem, because the hot water system was blowing up at the mountain. I went upstairs, chucked all my clothes in the bag, then went back downstairs in my car, went up see my kids at my parents' place.
In the lengthy interview, Michael Bodsworth detailed everything he did in the entire 24 hours from the time he saw Samantha.
And what time did you leave your mum and dad's place?
About half past six. Then I went to Woolies.
Why'd you go there?
Get smokes.
What sort of smokes, your mum?
Long Beach.
Did you get a receipt at all from Woolworths?
Yeah.
Do you have that receipt with you?
No, it's at the flat there. At my room.
Do you know what time the purchase was made?
18:44 on there.
How are you able to say what the time was on the docket?
Because it got written on the docket.
Did you look at the docket and see?
No, I always check the docket.
Do you always check the time on the docket?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the only way I get to tell the time. I don't wear a watch.
Oh, okay.
Then I rang Sam and told him the car wouldn't start.
What was wrong with your car?
The battery terminals are a bit dicky. So I rang Sam. She said she'll come and get me. And then she rang me back and she locked herself out the house.
At what stage was that?
That was, she was coming to get me. And she walked out to her car and she locked herself out the house because she didn't pick the keys up. I told her that she'll have to try and break in somehow.
He says that's the last he saw or spoke with Samantha, and that he waited for a small period of time before beginning to walk to her house.
What's happened when you got to Sam's place?
It was a couple of doors up. There was no car, no Sam, no nothing.
Any lights on inside the house?
No lights, no nothing.
He's then walked all the way back to his car at the car park, managed to get it started, and then simply driven back to the Mount Pleasant Hotel, where he's gone, had a shower, changed his clothes, and gone downstairs to have a drink at the bar.
Can you give us any explanation as to what she would be doing at Noosa Heads?
She won't be.
Do you ever go down there together?
No.
Has she ever gone down there on her own?
Not as far as I know.
And were you in Noosa Heads last night?
No.
Did you travel south of Gympie at all last night?
No, I didn't go anywhere out of Gympie last night.
He's then consented for us to go to his unit, which was on top of the Mount Pleasant Hotel, to have a look at his room, to conduct scientific investigations and to seize the article of clothing that he said that he was wearing the night before. When we went to the Mount Pleasant Hotel, I was aware that there are a number of patrons at the bar drinking. I wouldn't call it a lynch mob mentality. There was certainly a lot of people in the bar that night that did know Samantha, that had perhaps formed an opinion by that stage as who they believe may have been responsible for it.
The person making most of the accusations was Scott Knowles.
That Saturday evening, because we just found out that we'd lost Sam, there was a lot of anger with a lot of people because she was so well-loved. My anger was at boiling point because of my suspicions that Michael had done it.
Scott Knowles was Samantha's new boyfriend.
Sam and my relationship developed 2 months after that split up. We always got on well together and we just enjoyed one another's company.
Michael Bodsworth had mentioned this relationship in his interview.
Yeah, I still love you.
Was it fair to say that perhaps under those circumstances you may have felt a bit of jealousy?
No. I felt a bit hurt because the boys had seen him in the bed, but Sam swore black and blue that she's not sleeping with him or she's not having sex with him or anything of the nature, and I believe her.
So would you have any problems at all if they did have a relationship together?
No. No, not at all.
If he moved in?
He can move in there, it's fine.
Do you know that Sam and Scotty ever had any arguments?
No, I don't think so.
Would you describe him as being a violent person?
Scotty? I don't think he's got a violent bone in his body.
Scott Knowles seemed to be very emotional, and I think at one occasion he may have had to have been restrained by a friend because he was very upset. So we obviously wanted to avoid confrontation and just took Michael straight upstairs. scientific and sensor crime officers then made examination of his room, took photographs. And he gave us clothing items that he said he wore the night before, which he had washed and were hanging on the line outside of his unit. Some people wouldn't allow police to do that. They didn't seem to be too reluctant in that regard, but he certainly came across as not being overly concerned in relation to us taking those samples and really trying to corroborate or otherwise his version of events as he gave to us during the interview.
Michael Bodsworth was escorted from the hotel to his parents' place to keep him out of harm's way. Not long after, the detectives were told of a discovery only streets away from here that would help them determine what really happened to Samantha on that Friday night.
On Friday night, 29-year-old Samantha Bodsworth left the Gympie Hotel where she worked and drove home. She never returned to have drinks with her boyfriend, her battered body found near Noosa's tourist strip yesterday morning. Samantha had worked at the hotel to help support her two sons, aged 5 and 7. She also did part-time charity work.
After the first 24 hours of the investigation, we had confirmation that the deceased was in fact Samantha Bodsworth. We had two prime persons of interest, that being Mr. Michael Bodsworth and Mr. Scott Knowles. However, to an extent, Mr. Bodsworth shone a bit bright and Scott Knowles did.
Put us a look at your hand. I just noticed before that you've got a cut there on you.
Yeah, I've got one there.
Right, middle finger.
One there.
Well, this one's here. Yeah. That appears to be a fairly fresh sort of cut, that one there.
Obviously, we were interested in those to see whether they had any bearing on perhaps him being involved in Samantha's death.
Can you tell me where they came from?
Yeah, work.
From work? When did you do those?
Friday. You got another one there.
Excellent. Oh, yeah.
So we photographed those.
Mr. Bodsworth was asked if he would voluntarily supply a specimen of his blood for the purpose of DNA. He declined this, saying that he didn't like needles too much, but was prepared to give us a mouth swab.
As the detectives waited for results from scrapings taken from underneath Samantha's nails to compare with the DNA provided by her ex-partner, forensic investigators were busy examining Samantha's car. It was found here, at the back of a nightclub in Gympie.
There were a number of flowers and bits of leaf and bark and other vegetative type items on the driver's seat and on the driver's floor and around the back of the vehicle. Jammed into the number plate holder was a fairly large fluorescence which looked like pollen and was fairly consistent with those that we had seen earlier that day at Noosa.
The botanical specimens, along with other items like cigarette butts, were bagged for evidence. While the butts appeared to be the brand smoked by Samantha, it was noted they were the same as those bought by Michael Bodsworth when he had gone to Woolworths. He had given police the receipt and also a set of Samantha's keys that had mysteriously turned up in his room the night Samantha was murdered.
And he pointed out that her car key was missing from that set of keys.
They were in my room last night.
Where'd you get them from?
Sam must have left them behind. Because Sam's got a key to my room too.
Oh, okay. But do you have a personal set of keys?
No, I do not have a personal set of keys to Sam's house, no.
So the keys that she... I don't understand about the keys being in your room.
No, I don't understand either. But there's no car key and the blue key's missing. She's got colour-coded. And the blue one's not there and the car key's not there.
We believe that the person who's responsible for her death has driven the vehicle.
One theory police are working on is that the mother of two young boys was abducted from Gympie, then driven to Noosa, where she was brutally murdered.
Anyone who may have seen the white Corolla registration 299CQO should contact police.
Later tonight, police will set up a major incident caravan here at the murder scene in the hope that someone will remember having seen Samantha, her car, or her killer.
As a result of that, a local truck driver by the name of Mr. Higgins came forward
on that night, come along a white car, travelling north my direction, going very slow. Got past him in the end and up the next hill he passed me again and, yeah, got stuck behind him again, so I noticed it a bit more.
The truck driver, Mr. Higgins, was adamant that the registration number was exactly the same as the deceased, and it was her vehicle that he sighted on the highway.
While the truck driver did not get a good look at the driver or notice if there was a passenger, it was clear that whoever had driven Samantha's car had placed it back at the car park in Gympie for a very specific reason.
I think that Mr. Bodsworth put it there because it facilitates part of the grander scheme and his idea of committing the perfect murder.
We wanted to interview and speak to as many people as possible that could help us either corroborate Michael's version of the events or disprove it.
I was coming down the stairs at the Mount Pleasant Hotel, and down the bottom there was Sam and Michael talking, and they were very loud. I wasn't quite sure what they were talking about, but they were doing a lot of arguments lately since he moved into the hotel. Whoever she spoke to in the pub, any male, Michael would be right onto him, you know, or he'd be fist up or whatever, and he'd grab her arm and things like that. I mean, they did have quite a few arguments.
While Pauline was able to confirm Michael's story about the hot water system not working, it was the information she gave police about what he did on Saturday that was proving of great interest.
He said, oh, I want to do a basket full of washing. He never did any washing because Sam always did his washing.
She'll come through, you know, she'll clean up my room and she'll take my washing home or she'll ask me to bring the washing around.
And that wasn't the only strange thing he did.
When he had the kids, he used to take them places, you know. He'd take them to Big Pineapple or he'd take them for a drive somewhere, you know, but that particular day, he just stayed at the hotel all day, asking all the time, where's Sam?
And there was more.
That Mr. Bodsworth was inquiring with persons at the Mount Pleasant Hotel as to what the time on the Woolworths receipt meant. And he was questioning people as to what that is in normal time.
Do you know what time the purchase was made?
18:44 on there.
Do you always check the time on the document?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the only way I get to tell the time. I don't wear a watch.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was very odd that he was saying that he had a receipt for cigarettes because you wouldn't go around telling people you'd just bought cigarettes and the time of it, you know.
The receipt, the keys, the washing, the broken down car. Walking to and from Samantha's place were all suspicious. But the police could not discredit Michael Bodsworth's version of events.
He had a pretty well-constructed alibi. That led us to believe that he was either very confident, innocent, or possibly trying to convince the police that he was removing himself from this investigation and being a suspect.
We're waiting for information to come to us from our pathologists to try and give us some sort of direction as to where we need to go with this investigation.
No, it can't be easy.
In the meantime, the detectives were about to put their faith in the power of a psychic.
Well, you know, I've had Sam coming in. I've been talking to her and she just said, go and see Michael. She just keeps saying, go and see Michael.
A week after Samantha's murder, police had one hot suspect, but no evidence to arrest him.
Every day that goes by, that frustration increases, that feeling of inability to successfully finalise a chapter in a very, very sad story.
You were so happy. And now, so tragically gone from us. But your love and our memory of you will be in our hearts always.
A mother's words of sorrow as the tears flow in memory of Samantha Bodsworth. 100 people have packed the chapel at the Kalula Coast Crematorium to pay their final tribute.
They vowed to never forget 29-year-old Samantha and to make sure her spirit lives on for the two boys she left behind.
The fact that no one had been arrested was very frustrating, especially for Sam's parents. There was no closure. Michael was still free. Unfortunately, the police didn't have anything to get him with straight away.
We weren't in a position to alleviate the Hall's pain. We weren't in a position to say, yes, we've been able to arrest someone, anyone, for this offence, because there was no evidence.
A number of persons came forward to assist us in the investigation, one of those being Patricia Kelly, who was known to both Samantha and Michael.
She's a tarot card reader, and she believed through previous readings with both of them that she had formed almost a bond with Michael. She believed that if Michael had done it, then she thought there was a chance that he might tell her.
Sandy Bates.
Oh,
getting
you.
Yeah.
Just got to stay out of the way of the lynch mob for a while.
With Pat's permission, she wore a recording device on her person and arranged to meet Michael in a park in Gympie to try and see whether she could get any information out of him that would prove that his version that he gave police was untruthful, and to see whether he would ultimately confess to her that he killed Samantha.
Well, you know, I've had Sam coming in. I've been talking to her and she just said, go and see Michael. She just keeps saying, go and see Michael. And I put the cards out and they weren't good. And it didn't look good for you. So whether it's
nothing's been looking fucking good for me. So
I know. But she keeps pointing the finger at you, Michael. I have to tell you that. And if you've killed Sam and you want to talk to somebody, you can talk to me. I'm not going to judge you.
During this conversation with Kelly, Bodsworth maintained the alibi and the story that he had supplied to us, and there was nothing significant that came out of it evidentiary-wise.
Michael, the problem is that you're under suspicion.
What I've given them?
Trouble is, though, they can't find the killer.
I've given them everything that they've asked for, apart from blood. But they gave me a cotton wool to chew on.
Those results were now back.
It was discovered that Mr. Bodsworth's DNA was present on a tea towel that was found in the kitchen and on the floor in the bedroom.
His DNA was also found on one of five cigarette butts found in the ashtray near Samantha's bed. But none of those in her car belonged to her ex-partner. The post-mortem pathology reports were a different matter.
The DNA came back under her fingernails of that belonging to Michael Bodsworth. Obviously, that was a breakthrough in the investigation. We now had something physical that we could work with to say that something has occurred between them that would have his DNA under her fingernails.
But the defence Michael Bodsworth had given his tarot card reader was good. He had lived in the house, was now a visitor, and freely admitted he and Samantha did have arguments. Police desperately needed to put him not just at her house, but at the place her body was dumped.
It seemed likely that the one link that we hoped would be the link between the vehicle, the clothing, and the scene was pollen.
Pollen evidence had never before been used in a murder case in Australia. In fact, it had only been used 9 times before worldwide. So it was going to take some time to investigate the possibilities and get the answers.
We have a pretty high burden of proof to be able to charge anyone with any offence. We wanted to make sure that at the end of the day, every avenue was exhausted and that we had everything that we could possibly get back before us to make a decision whether we had enough evidence to charge Michael Bodsworth.
It was now 3 months since Samantha had been murdered.
There was a custody hearing where Malcolm and Lynette Hall wanted to have full custody of the two boys. In their mind, Michael was responsible for Samantha's death, and they didn't want him to have custody of her children.
custody on that day was awarded to Samantha's parents, and Mr. Bodsworth shortly thereafter left Queensland and went down to South Australia to reside.
When Michael Bodsworth went to Adelaide, when he lost custody of the children, we were very sceptical then whether we would get him.
I was terrified he would get away with it, because that meant I would have to use other resources that I don't know if I could live with. But we wanted to try and let the law take its course.
Before going, Michael Bodsworth left a further statement of his innocence.
A cross had been placed at the entrance to the car park in Hall Road, where Samantha's body was found. The location of the cross was nowhere near where the body was located, giving the impression that that's where he thought the body was placed, thus giving more credibility to his version that he didn't take part in her death.
Samantha Bodsworth's body was found among flowering acacia, or wattle trees. Samples had been routinely taken. When her car was located, pollen was also found in and outside of the vehicle. Police also had in their possession the washed clothes that Michael Bodsworth wore the night Samantha disappeared.
Now, my job was to find out if the flowers in the car, on the tape lifts and in the vacuuming filter sample was the same as those species at Noosa. There were two acacia plants flowering at the time where Samantha's body was found. And one of them was like, it's a bushy type plant. Then that species was Acacia sophorae. And this is the species that we found on the number plate. And we also found it in the vacuum filter from the car in the front driver's side, which shows that the car had actually been in Noosa, right near the crime scene.
Dr. Milne could say this with certainty because acacia has a particular characteristic.
Acacia is insect and animal pollinated. It doesn't just fly in. It has to be transported by something. And so when somebody brushes against them and the plant's flowering, they get into the car, it transfers from their clothing onto the seat and whatever they have on their shoes.
In this case, it was the front driver's seat and floor of Samantha's car. Interestingly, the subject was brought up in the interview police conducted with Michael Bodsworth on the day Samantha's body was found.
Have you ever been in Sam's car? When was the last time in Sam's car?
About a week, I think.
Whereabouts in the car were you seated?
Passenger.
Front or back?
Front.
Okay, have you ever been in the driver's seat of that vehicle?
No.
So if Bodsworth was the guilty person, then we would expect to find some of that particular acacia pollen from Acacia sophorae on his clothing that would then put him into the car. Now, as I understand, his clothing was actually washed after the murder and before the police picked them up. So instead of thousands of pollen grains from acacia on there, there were only a few.
But it was enough. The clothes Michael Bodsworth wore that night were of a coarse texture and became a pollen trap. One wash couldn't rid the tiny microscopic evidence that had now put him at the place Samantha was dumped. However, before they could make an arrest, the police wanted to do one last check.
We then decided to walk the route that Mr. Bodsworth had told us he took that afternoon. It was for the purpose of ensuring that there were no acacia pollen trees along that route where the pollen may have gotten onto his clothes, thus having a legitimate reason for having the pollen on his clothes.
The plants that were growing around in that area were well off the path, and none of those particular species were flowering at the time. So I actually had pollen collected from the herbarium from those gimpy species, and I looked at that pollen to compare it with the acacia sophorae pollen in Noosa, and they were totally different.
We travelled to South Australia, where we spoke with Mr. Bodsworth at a service station near Christie's Beach. And upon being informed that he was going to be returned to Queensland and charged with the murder, he was quite surprised and anxious.
The man has been arrested in Adelaide and charged with the brutal murder of his de facto wife in Gympie 8 months ago. The battered body of mother of two, Samantha Bodsworth, was found in sand dunes at Noosa.
It was on the way back that he, without any prompting, said that he wished to speak to us about it and tell us the truth. And because we didn't have any recordings with us, we asked him, could he hold his information until we got back to Maroochydore, where we had suitable equipment so we could electronically record his conversation.
All right, well, as I said before, what do you wish to tell us?
Sam picked me up the night she died from Woolies. When we got back to her place, because I was going to have a shower in it there.
What did he say?
He said he saw you driving like an idiot in the car with the kids.
And she was telling me that, you know, after the weekend I can't see the kids and all this because her dad's been in her ear about, you know, I drive dangerously with the kids in the car. You know, the kids, they mean everything to me. You know, and then she said, I couldn't see them. So I just sort of lost it.
What do you mean you lost it?
Well, I ended up strangling her somehow. I can't remember much about it.
Mr. Bodsworth added that upon finding her deceased, he has panicked and not taken the course to ring the police. He chose to hide it. He has then changed Samantha into the clothes that she was found in on the Saturday morning by the tourists.
There was marks on her top, on the white top, there were some marks there. She wouldn't go out like that. So I changed her. You know, and so what? She was going out.
Okay, all right.
She
doesn't work with the clothes when
she goes out, so, you know, I changed it.
Whereabouts in the vehicle did you put it?
Front passenger seat.
Okay. Why'd you do that?
Because if I drive this way, she won't sit.
He is very strong mentally, very, very strong. And I do not believe for 1 minute that his mind went blank in any way, shape or form. He knew exactly what he was doing. He planned it. But what he didn't reckon on was the DNA and the pollen and the fact that we knew, every single one of us who knew Sam knew that it was him.
I drove her car back to Gympie and parked her car at the night disco, and that's it.
Can I ask you why you did that?
As if she went out for the night or something, you know.
When Samantha Bodsworth's body was found dumped in sand dunes at the Noosa Spit, her family suspected her former de facto, Michael James Bodsworth. 7 months later, the 36-year-old mechanic was charged with Samantha's murder after forensic evidence linked him to the scene. Despite confessing to police, though, Bodsworth pleaded not guilty.
Basically, when you're facing life imprisonment, you've got nothing to lose, so why not plead not guilty? Ultimately, the jury did see through him and they believed the evidence that the police had gathered, the acacia pollen comparisons, which put him at the scene, the DNA, the blood found at her house, together with his confession. The jury were able to come back with a conviction of murder and he got life imprisonment.
Unfortunately, life doesn't mean life. He's taken someone's life away and he's still living. He gets to get out eventually and have a life again. Samantha doesn't.
Michael Bodsworth will be eligible for parole in 2010.
I understand that Bodsworth thought that he'd committed the perfect crime, and I'm sure that he felt that he had, but science is always on the move and there's always new developments in forensic science.
So was he smart? Was he cunning, conniving? I don't know. All I know is that he's been punished for something he did in the way that he should have been punished.